A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Josh Brown, this is The Wind-Up, where we usually go into all sorts of different news things, all sorts of different game things, maybe we disagree or whatever, but you told me before recording to not plan an opening segment because you've got something to talk about.
In fact, Scott Tilford, I have a belated birthday present for you, because as you probably know, it was your birthday.
It was a little
last
bit.
Week, last Monday.
Yeah.
However, we pre-recorded The Wind-Up
we
on
did.
The Friday, and I couldn't give you your birthday present
because
I hadn't completed it. Don't get excited.
Okay.
It's not a very good birthday present.
He's not.
But
did you play Ori?
I played Ori.
Did you?
And the Blind Forest, and I'm almost finished Ori and the Will of the Wisps.
Over
the past 2 weeks, I have been telling you that I have not been playing anything, when in fact, I have been playing through both Ori games at an admittedly slow pace, because Love Island has been on, and it's still been hot. However, I have done my best, and I got through the first game, and I'm two-thirds of the way through Will of the Wisps, and I feel like right now, I'm able to talk about both in depth and actually give you a proper take on them.
I'm almost crying because of how much I love the Ori games and you finally touching them. I don't know how much I'm going to react to the fact if you don't like them. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, you won't know.
I don't need you to like them necessarily because I adore them so much, but how have you made of them? Because basically to fill people in, and I'm going to change my Twitter bio for this.
This is what I was thinking. Yeah. I was like, Scott's had that Twitter bio for too long. I need my birthday present to him will be freeing that space up for something different.
For the longest time, I just wanted Josh to play the Ori games, and there's two of them so far, and they're made by Moon Studios or whatever. Ori and the Blind Forest, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, really gorgeous Metroidvania side-on games. I think the art style is unbelievable, and the score by Gareth Coker is absolutely beautiful. I just love those games. I think they're immaculate 2D platformers, really, really solid Metroidvania elements in terms of unlocking the rest of the world and everything, and they have such great themes of conservationism and nature and just the beauty in the natural world. There's something about those games that absolutely enraptures me, and especially for Will of the Wisps, the stuff that they do in terms of like saving a little village of little, I forget what you call the little populace that you look after, but that stuff where it's just really touching. And I definitely have a soft spot for animal stuff, just because of animals in real life or whatever, but there's something about that franchise that absolutely touches me and I love it, and I want to know what you think.
Well, let's start with Ori and the Blind Forest, because obviously I played them in order, never played these games before like we mentioned, and Blind Forest surprised me in how well it held up, actually.
Yeah.
You know, I was kind of, because I mean, before I went into them, you were kind of telling me to, you know, play Will of the Wisps
is such a step up, but you need Blind Forest.
That's where it's at. So I went into Blind Forest and I loved like the first 5 minute kind of opening of it, the little montage you get about, you know, like these different animals, characters, you know, in this place. Mm-hmm. And then obviously you start the story in earnest. And it was just such a tight platformer. Like, I love the way that it keeps escalating and keeps adding to your power set, and the levels become more difficult and complex in accordance to that.
I love that you can make your own checkpoints as well.
Yeah,
I do love that in Will of the Wisps, they were like, okay, too many people didn't make checkpoints, so like, let's just give you them. But I love it when in Ori, it's a nice little idea that you can burn your energy for combat by banking a checkpoint. I think that's a cool mechanic.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that because I didn't use it at all for the first few hours because I was playing it like a survival horror game, just not wanting to use any of my resources. And then I realized I was able to save wherever, and that made the puzzles way less frustrating because I like that you could get past a really difficult platforming section, and then as long as there's no enemies and you're not in like a really dangerous area, you can save, and then you know you've banked that. I thought that was a cool addition to alleviate some of the potential frustration, because those like areas get complex.
Oh, dude, it's like it's
the end of the game.
Like full on, like Super Meat Boy. Like it's like full on, like you will nail this section of jumps or you will die over and over again. And obviously there's the bits where they really nail that stuff, and where you're like the escape sequences, like where you, the first big one, I forget the name of the tree, but there's a specific tree that's flooding and it goes up and up and up, and yes, you have to just nail that entire sequence. And it's gorgeous. The music's great, but like a lot of people online were like, oh my god, that tree is where that game either really works for you or you like give up on it.
That literally killed me millions of times. It was so difficult because, yeah, like you say, you know, you need to get that pathway through the escape route perfect. You need to fully understand what's coming next. And if I do have some criticisms with both games, it's that it is sometimes the deaths feel a little bit cheap in those escape situations.
It is memorization.
Memorization, and you often don't know what's coming until you get killed by it, which I didn't really love. But the, like you said, you know, the checkpoints are so close that it wasn't that frustrating. But yeah, it is really, really tough. You know, there's a section in, it's like, oh, I can't remember what it's called. It's like a little forest where you get like the gravity blocks, you know, where you can kind of jump on them, and that kind of changes the kind of direction you're jumping, and you have to kind of change this 2D space into an almost 3D space into your mind for it to work.
Like Fez.
And I loved the way that first game just kind of goes. Like there are some cutscenes, you know, here and there. There are some scripted sequences, but I enjoyed that it was just a great selection of, you know, interconnected levels. In each level brought something new to the table, and it just kind of essentially let you free to experiment within those rule sets. And
what
I enjoyed it, Scott.
Good. I think that's the thing. We need to talk about Will of the Wisps. I feel like if, like, as a franchise, like I think that that's the game you can give to anyone. I think Blind Forest is recommendable, but the combat is a little weird because it's all ranged.
Yeah, that's
like, it's not, you're sort of just like hitting a button and whatever's near you will be auto-targeted, which I quite like as a way to maintain momentum. You can kind of like dart through areas, like mashing that button as you go past enemies, and everything will just get auto-targeted, like Panzer Dragoon or whatever. I was like, that's cool, but it didn't feel great. It didn't feel like I was connecting. And so when you get to Will of the Wisps, they're like, here's a massive hammer, here's some spears, here's like, you can full-on whack a thing across the map, and it's so kinetic. And we haven't talked about the visuals that much either, but I think Will of the Wisps brings that stuff together so well.
100%. You know, I will echo what you said about the combat in the first game kind of sucking. In fact, when I got about halfway through the game and you get the power where you can essentially like bounce off projectiles and enemies, you know, you can use as a kind of platform to leap from, I was just doing that on every enemy and not even killing them. Yeah. I was just using them as a kind of secondary platform to get to the objective quicker. But the most immediate thing in Will of the Wisps was the improvements to the combat system, because it feels like really good to have those melee attacks, to have those big strong hammer attacks like you mentioned, even the range kind of bow and arrow kind of,
I think they give
attacks.
Him a sword as well.
Yeah
Just, tiny little Ori just have a massive sword.
You've got this like sword of light. It's just like so cool, and it's like you said, you know, it feels way more impactful. It's kind of a little bit more visceral, and just overall, like the step up. I may have some controversial takes about Will of the Wisps, I will say, however,
the thing that I should preface by saying that they're two of my favorite games of all time. Will of the Wisps is in my like top five or something
of all
like,
time.
Oh, dude, outrageous. I think it's gorgeous. It's cool. Outrageous.
No, I mean like good outrageous.
Oh, yeah. I think it's an immaculate creation. I think it's just incredible. I love the thematics and everything else. But I think if I was reviewing them, I don't think they're perfect games. Like, especially Blind Forest, more for the combat. However, I do think Will of the Wisps is the one that is closer to like a 5-star game overall.
Yeah.
But carry on.
Well, I was just going to say, Will of the Wisps is the one where you boot it up and it feels like a substantial piece of art, if that makes sense. You know, immediately the visual, while great in Blind Forest, are stepped up to next level like 4K HDR.
That's why I knew you'd like that stuff.
Yeah, like the lightning in Will of the Wisps is just unbelievable. I'm just stood there like kind of ogling everything that's happening. You know, the way that the environments kind of shake with, like, you know, the different weather effects that are going on, whether you're
the
in a snowy area.
As well.
Yep. The depth of detail. I'm playing like a 6K super sampling mode in 60 frames per second, which just looks incredibly crisp. And like I said, you know, the contrast between the light and the dark areas. Obviously, you are a character made of light, and the way you illuminate the areas is so striking and cool. Mm-hmm. And it feels good. Like, the first game felt good to play, but this one feels even better, like I said, with the addition of this new combat system.
I love as well, just to very quickly throw in, that they address things like, you know, there wasn't much impetus to fight the enemies, like you just said, in Blind Forest, by giving you little mini games and stuff in this. It's like, oh, here's like a combat challenge trial, which I think makes the most of the combat stuff. I love those little pockets of combat because it's an excuse to experiment. And some of them, are, I think some of them are weapon specific, or they felt weapon specific because you just unlocked something. And then some of them are like speed trials where you're racing like a ghost version of yourself or whatever. I like that they flesh that stuff out. And then you have the side missions as well. But they don't really, think of them as side missions. It's just little bits to mop up.
Yeah.
I think there's a nice amount of that stuff.
That's it. The second one, it has so much more content than the first. Not that the first is like, you know, a short, lean game. There are still secrets in that title, but Will of the Wisps immediately, you notice that it has so much more content. Like you said, you've got these challenges, you have the side missions, and the world itself is much bigger than it was before. And that is something I both love and also didn't necessarily like. Just going from one to another so quickly. Like I alluded to when I was talking about Blind Forest, I like how that game just went.
Right.
You didn't have many kind of roadblocks or cutscenes. You just were going from these great levels to these other great levels, and you were getting to experiment with the mechanics, whereas Will of the Wisps intentionally kind of slows you down to explore the world more and talk to way more NPCs than you did in the first game. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that stuff I enjoyed. However, the side missions I haven't really enjoyed that much.
Really?
Some of them have been cool to seek out. However, for the most part, I'm kind of wanting to get away from those roadblocks and maybe revisit them when I've finished the campaign, if that's even possible. But for now, that's the only kind of drawback, in that I can look at it objectively and say that this is a step up. It's better. It's got more content, and the content is great. However, I kind of enjoyed the leanness of the first game.
The thing is,
a little bit more, perhaps.
I do know what you mean, but the thing for me is, like, other than the village that you're putting back together, where it comes with a sequence of, like, you go collect this, go do this, like, that's like the most gamey part of that whole thing. For me, there's a reason I love Ori overall is that there's a sense of flow to the whole thing that I think there's, like, this, like, thematic embodiment of what they're going for in terms of this depiction of, like, beautiful, ethereal nature. And so for me, like, in Will of the Wisps, I just played it, and, like, I found that all those sort of disparate parts kind of stitched together anyway. Like, the only one that I had to step away from the main thread to prioritize was the village stuff.
Right.
And that was because I chose to, like, I wish I could think what you called those little creatures.
I know, I can't even remember. I've been playing it.
The little boys. And I wanted to make sure the little boys were all right. And so I did that whole village thing, like, of my own accord. But the rest of it, I sort of just, as you're going back and forward across that map anyway, I would find that as I was, like, crisscrossing stuff, I was like, oh, I have this item for this person now, or I have this thing, or whatever. And so other than making a point to stop and check in with people, it wasn't, like, too much. If anything, it reminded me of Hollow Knight, and I was like,
yes.
In Hollow Knight, you're checking in with all those, okay, have you got anything new for me to say? Okay, Mass Effect 2, what are we doing? Like, sort of doing that stuff. So I guess I might give you advice in terms of, don't go off the main path that much, because you'll probably find stuff that you can just bank anyway.
Well, this is it. I kind of gave up on that element of it, because I was talking to all of these characters. They all wanted something else, and I kind of decided that if I come across it while I'm on my journey, that's cool, but otherwise, to be honest, the rewards in that game don't do much for me in the ways that you can level up your abilities and such. And that's fine. Like, I don't really necessarily need that, because the core set and mechanics are so satisfying. Yeah. Those are kind of extras.
You're going to level up anyway, like, as you go.
Yeah, totally. It's funny that you mentioned Hollow Knight, because, like, a game that we're going to talk about soon, where you were playing it and kind of just wishing you were playing something else. I don't wish that I was playing Hollow Knight, but they are so similar in a lot of ways, where I am reminded of Hollow Knight and how much I enjoyed that game. And this, to me, is a slight step down, but not by much. I still think it's really, you know, incredible. And what I love about Will of the Wisps as well is that it does free you up, especially in the middle part. I'm currently at the moment where I'm looking for the Will of the Wisps, you know, so I've got 2 out of 3 of those. And I like that it gives you those 3 areas. It tells you where they are and then essentially says, look, you can tackle these in whatever order you want. I enjoyed that element of freedom.
My thing with the thing, I never finished Hollow Knight, and I've got a lot, I'm pretty far through it. Something about that game just didn't click with me, and I don't know if it's the how zoomed in it is. I don't feel like you can read the terrain as well as I want to, and, like, so in Ori, you know, you're more zoomed out, and, like, you're smiling because I guess it's gonna be the thing that you do like about Hollow Knight, whereas something about Hollow Knight I just didn't click with, whether it's the combat, the camera angle, the fact you gotta, like, make the map yourself or whatever, which I grew to quite like the second time I tried to get through it. But for whatever reason, I just don't stick with Hollow Knight. And I love the aesthetic, the music's great, and I love the whole concept and everything. But in Ori's case, I feel like it, like I said, it just goes in a way that just lets you latch onto those things. And yes, there are side missions, there are, like, things you can get distracted by, but I'll just say that I guess I just didn't really. I sort of just was like, I'm always like that in more games. I'll prioritize the main thing. 20 characters wanting me to do stuff, I'll get there, whatever. Like, if I find your thing in a dungeon I'm in anyway, then you can have it, but I'm not going to go there for you. And so that was kind of my ethos with Will of the Wisps. But yeah, I think, like you said, it's this bigger sort of expansive version of the template they do in Blind Forest. And I love that. I think that, like, the thing that, like, elevates Will of the Wisps is the story stuff, and you haven't seen all of it yet.
Yes.
So I guess there's that. And also, like, the agency that Ori has in that world is why everyone is like, oh my god, you're Ori from the other land, and, like, you've got, you're this thing. So, like, I quite like that as, like, an excuse to go and do more stuff.
Well, without, you know, getting into spoilers, I guess, I do want to talk to you about that, because I would say right now, I would say Blind Forest is an 8 out of 10.
Right.
And Will-O-The-Wisps is a 9 out of 10. Mm-hmm. However, across the board, the story of either game hasn't necessarily connected to me that much. And no. I was going into Will-O-The-Wisps, you know, having heard that it was this kind of really moving, emotional piece, and maybe my expectations were too high. And while the opening was great, you know, when you're flying over to the other island and you get, you know, separated and you're searching for your little owl friend.
Yeah.
The story itself hasn't really engaged me, funnily enough, in quite different to how we usually are. It's been the mechanics this time around that I've really kind of gelled with, and the story has almost been secondary.
Well, it's worth saying that if anyone, I mean, I don't know if I'd recommended the story to you, then I misspoke. It's definitely...
Sorry, okay.
No, it might entirely be me. I'm like, if you talk about story as literal plot beats, there are very few. But if we're talking about thematics and narrative representation, and even things like, you know, you are saving a land from a toxic force or whatever it is, like that hits regardless for me as like an animal lover or something. So it's like, narratively, I think it hits. Like, and then, yeah, they do more with like the quote unquote characters as you go, but very little. I wouldn't be expecting like a plot twist or anything.
Right.
It's just sort of like, it's a depiction of a supernatural version of a forest that things have happened to and you're trying to save it. Like, it's, I don't think there's much more than that, but I do think they nail that stuff.
Yes.
So like, it's definitely in the visuals. It's definitely in, you know, seeing animals in pain, wanting to make sure they're okay, being this sort of warrior or whatever, like guardian of light, this force that's trying to help everybody. Like, that'll either click with you as a thematic or it won't. And so, like, that's the thing that I would hang a lot of the emotion on. Like, in terms of me being in bits playing Will of the Wisps, it's like, it's more towards the end, certainly. But it is in those thematics of like making sure that a bunch of animals are all right.
Right. I mean, yeah, in a sort of universal kind of want, I suppose. Mm. You want to make sure those animals are all right. Yeah. You want to save the forest. You don't want it to be doomed. You know, of course, you get, at least I got a little bit, you know, emotional when there's a big sort of death at the end of the first game. And it's kind of like, oh, where do we go from here? And then when the second game kind of picks up straight from that, it's like, this is cool. You've established a bond between these characters, quote unquote characters. I don't know why. Do we quote unquote the characters?
They well, it's only because characters. They, like, because everyone's a mute. I guess you've got, like, a couple of characters talk to you, but like, yeah. Ori doesn't speak or anything. So it's like, yeah they're definitely characters. I mean, they have names. It's like, I looked them up before because I forgot. It's like, yeah, Ori and Ku and Lupo. Yes. And there are characters, quote unquote, in there. They have characteristics. Totally. So they're definitely characters.
Yeah, and they do kind of bond, and you do see that visually. And I do like how a lot of the story is told, like you said, you know, just through the visuals, because those visuals are so spectacular in a lot of ways.
That's the stuff that got me massively invested. Like, I really cared about freeing up the elder gods, like that giant tortoise, or like there's a wolf or whatever, like just in a bear and everything. Like, that's the stuff that I really cared about. But it's in the animation, it's in the facial expressions, it's in the thematics and the narrative, rather than plot beats.
100%. And the second game especially feels like it's had so much money poured into it that those animations are, you know, so pristine. Mm. Like, the way that the story is told is so tight. It just feels like a real opulent game, considering its kind of initial...
But like a
size.
Well-placed budget, I would say.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's been utilized really well. Mm. And yeah, I was impressed with them both, Scott. I'm excited to finish Will of the Wisps. It's maybe no Hollow Knight, but what is, you know? What is?
The thing I was going to say in regards to Hollow Knight, in regards to like Hollow Knight hit you, was that your first Metroidvania, like a 2D Metroidvania?
No, it's not really. Like, I'd played others before.
Because you know when people play a Souls game, and whatever their first Souls game is their favorite, because it's the first time you're discovering all those systems. I find that Shadow Complex is my favorite Metroidvania because it was the first time I played through one of those games.
Right.
And so I think there's always going to be a secret source to like one of those games, depending on whatever your first one was. And I would recommend Shadow Complex to anyone who's listening to this. It's like a one-off game on the 360 that has like an HD version now. And that game has so many twists and turns. It's great. But it is a Metroidvania with Nolan North. And that whole thing stuck with me because it was about exploring the environment, finding the power-ups, finding the abilities, and then realizing you can access more stuff. Yeah. And then just like, it's that whole feel of like, oh my God, this becomes this, that a really good Metroidvania nails. And like, Hollow Knight is an immaculate one of them. It wasn't for me, but I get that it is for a lot of people. And so I think if you played that first, just by sheer virtue of playing that first, that's going to nail those beats in a way that Ori just can't.
I think yes and no, because the stuff that I like about Hollow Knight isn't necessarily in Ori, if that makes sense. You know, there are, you know, like the kind of Metroidvania style unlockables to get in Ori, and there are power-ups to pursue in Ori, but I've never felt compelled to do that because the set of mechanics that I get, I don't think they add much to the gameplay, whereas in Hollow Knight, I was encouraged to explore because I was really wanting those power-ups.
Oh,
you know,
because there's like triple jump and the weapons in Ori. For me, I chased the hell out of them because I was like, give me everything. Like, and then, yeah, when you can like, you can dart off enemies and like, yeah, I thought that it was the traversal stuff in Ori that I was like looking forward to getting more of.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me in Ori, you just get enough of those in the main campaign and I don't really engage with the combat and the difficulty in the platforming. I can alleviate that with the stuff that I'm already getting, if that makes sense. Whereas in Hollow Knight, because that's kind of more souls infused, you know, you're going up against these bosses where, for me, I needed that extra weapon damage, or, you know, I needed to find this shortcut to get to it quicker or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think you're either an Ori person or you're a Hollow Knight person. And for me, the aesthetic of Hollow Knight appealed to me a little bit more. Mm-hmm. The world, I was a little bit more engrossed in. And I know you didn't like the kind of way you had to make a mental map and then buy a map to kind of fill that space out. But I liked that a little bit more in terms of uncovering a world. To me, Hollow Knight felt like a world and Ori feels like a set of levels. And I don't even think one is better than the other. I just gravitated towards Hollow Knight
bit more. That was my thing with Hollow Knight, that I love the concept. I like this whole idea of like a bug kingdom, like just in the grass or whatever, and then all the things that you find underneath there. And like the Soulsian influence is very strong, like in terms of like cackling random NPCs in the distance that you talk to and they give you random items and then they laugh at you again and whatever. But yeah, I think at some point, it is just personal preference. Like I will take an animal conservationist story, shout out to Gibbon on the Nintendo Switch versus like an evil bug kingdom thing, but they are close. It's just there's something about Hollow Knight didn't grip me, but Ori did. But either way, thank you to you for finally getting out of those games. That's like the luscious present you could have given me. Hey, I love that a lot.
Hey, thank you, man. You have introduced me to two incredible games that now I can start recommending and pretending that they were my original recommendations. Scott Tilford won't even be mentioned when I'm talking to my friends.
As long as more people play Ori and know what Ori is and love his little face, then I'm game for that.
And now if they announce a third game, we can pop to it together, because I will definitely play a third title.
Yes, anyone who's not checked out the Ori series, they're both on Game Pass, and they're both immaculate. Just give them a shot.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Speaking of things that you should give a shot, Multiversus is out, which was the core of the main podcast last week, because you were on the Warner Brothers versus Nintendo train. And so...
Would you like to know, sorry...
Go on.
A strange coincidence.
Yes.
I have exactly one item of clothing with a Warner Brothers logo on it.
Okay.
And I'm wearing that right now.
That's
it's
true.
This shining jumper.
If they put Jack Torrance in Multiversus.
Yeah, I would play it. It's got a WB logo right there. I'm not, you know, bought by them or anything.
Corporate
but I just
chill.
Thought that was quite funny.
Yes, you're wearing the branded merchandise to work. But yeah, we both download Multiversus. It is free to play. And the thing is, I've found a lot of people have tweeted me, a few people have tweeted me, and James Tao said that when you go on the PlayStation Store, and I think you had this too, it suggests the paid version of the game and not the free-to-play one, which is very Warner Brothers. And also, speaking of nefarious stuff, before we get to the more positive stuff, I hate that that game starts with you making a Warner Brothers account.
Yes.
I had to dig one out from an ancient email, and I was like, just let me log in, lads. Like, I just want to play a couple of games of your stupid Smash Brothers clone, and you're making me say, because it wouldn't do it. It was like, well, this email's already been used for another account. We can't possibly just let you guest account. Like, just, oh my God, what are
I
we
almost,
doing?
I almost took a screenshot of that and sent it to you. Like, why does this keep happening? Yeah. I could not believe it. Nothing puts me off a game, Scott, than seeing that screen.
Same.
And having to remember a password from Arkham Knight that I probably used, you know, in trying to figure that stuff out.
Has anyone ever benefited from a Warner Brothers account?
No.
What are we getting from this?
I would like to know, to be honest, because I don't know why I need that account to play
game. They make you log in. I feel the other game that made me do this, and I just turned it off. I tweeted something. I mentioned Twitter a lot. Someone, and I've been put that out, and I was like, this just directly put me off this game.
I think it was, if I recall your Twitter history, it was Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines.
Yeah,
that Battle Blood Royale game.
Bloodhunt. It was
sorry,
the Battle Royale thing, and I was like, I'll give it a shot, but if you're like, what is directly opposed to giving it a shotness is giving me a profile login account creation thing. Anyway, Multiversus, if for whatever reason you don't know, is literally a Smash Brothers clone with Warner Brothers characters. Having played like, I don't know, about an hour of it now, and done like, you know, the available match types that there are and unlocked a couple of characters and everything. It's fine. I think it's very good. It's the best one we've got so far in terms of a Smash clone. It's way better than the Nickelodeon one.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's better than Brawlhalla, but I think it's solid enough. And I think if you want Warner Brothers characters mashing the hell out of each other in a made in a way that has charm and every character has signature animation and callbacks to their respective, you know, TV counterparts and everything, then it nails that stuff. But it did, like you said before, it just made me want to play Smash Brothers, or it reminded me of the franchise they're copying and how much better Smash Brothers is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you mentioned before when we were talking about Ori that, you know, did I enjoy Hollow Knight more because it was my first Metroidvania? And that, you know, that I don't think that's valid for that because it wasn't necessarily my first Metroidvania.
Right.
However, I might be enjoying Multiversus so much because it is my first Smash Brothers style experience that I've had myself and
right, right.
played at parties when I've had 6 pints. You know what I mean?
We are playing Smash Brothers at lunch. You're gonna have to make this comparison.
Right, okay. See, I would like to have like the kind of, you know, tools to properly compare both. So I can only go off Multiversus right now which is I think is an enjoyable game, is a really
solid
fighter. And, you know, we mentioned in the podcast last week whether we prefer Nintendo or Warner Brothers. I come down on the side of Warner Brothers, so I'm getting a lot of enjoyment from that. But I enjoyed the gameplay more than I expected to. You know, I've only played about an hour as well, just playing 2v2 online with random people and maining Superman. And I've enjoyed the hell out of it, you know, just super punching people off the stage, which I know is obviously a staple of Smash Brothers, and you've been able to do that for like decades at this point, but it's new for me.
Yes, they've nigh on brought. That's kind of the thing. It's you look at what they're doing, and we mentioned this on the main podcast last week. The idea that the Smash genre should have existed for a lot longer. There are a lot of Smash Brothers clones, but the Soul genre exists. The Smash genre should clearly exist. There's Lego Brawls coming out later this year. There'll be another one by the end of this year. And it's that whole thing of they have literally Warner Brothers are a very money hungry company. Like, they put microtransactions into Mortal Kombat 11. Like, we know they can do. They can look at the competition and go, okay, we'll have a bit of that. And I feel like that's what this is. They look at Smash Brothers and go, literally just do Smash Brothers with Warner Brothers characters, and that's the core foundation. However, they do have some additional stuff. Like, their big play for differentiation is how much you can do in the air. Like, you have double jumps, double dashes, infinite air moves, and I think 2 air specials. And so you can do a lot in the air, and also any character with a lasso. Funny enough, Ted Lasso's not in there yet. They better give him a lasso.
They better.
But yeah, Wonder Woman and whatever you call that rain dog thing from Steven Universe. Yes. They both have, and there's a few of the characters too, have the ability to latch onto other characters with big long whips or strands or whatever to bring them back. So if you jump off a cliff and fight some dude in the air and you're about to fall to your peril, I can bring you back in again. So and there's a lot of other team-up moves as well. There's a lot of stuff in the move list that tell you, like, hey, this combos with someone else. And you can pick up your partner and throw them at someone depending on who you're playing as. So they're seeding a lot of direct, like, co-op stuff in here, and a lot of, like, team synergy stuff that Smash Brothers just doesn't have. In terms of, like, specific animations and the aerial stuff. I think that comes from one of the big bugbears of Smash Brothers being that you just occasionally do too many moves and fall off the side and you can't recover.
Right.
And I feel like they've gone, let's make air recovery a specific mechanic. And it's fine. I just think that because it's, like, for me, it really comes down to the animation. Like, I'm not enjoying the combat as much as Smash Brothers. It doesn't hit as much. Like you said about when you do a ring out, it has the exact same copied across thing as Smash Brothers, where it's sort of like you almost it almost misses a frame,
yeah,
and then it catches up and goes pow, and they fly right across the screen. And I'm like, that's so satisfying, but it's directly what Smash Brothers is. And that level of weight to that connection is in the rest of Smash Brothers too.
This is all true, and this is where I can bring in a half-baked analogy that I just thought up right now. You remember when PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds was introducing everyone to
H1Z1's PUBG.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, 100%. Everyone was being introduced to Battle Royale, and that was like a premium service. You had to buy into it. Initially, it was only on PC. Mm. And then Fortnite came out, right? And Fortnite was on everything, and it was free to play. Mm-hmm. Is Multiverses the Fortnite of the kind of like Smash Bros. Style genre?
That's,
because
yeah,
I wonder whether, you know, a lot of people own Nintendo consoles. They sell incredibly well. A lot of people have played Smash Brothers. They sell millions and millions of copies. However, does Multiverses get something right by being a free-to-play, more accessible version that, you know, potentially more people might end up playing because you can play it across a bunch of different platforms and the cost of entry is not £60 like it is for Smash Brothers?
Oh,
because that's the only reason why it's my first Smash Brothers type game, because it is free to play it and it's so accessible. Like, I probably wouldn't have spent £60 on this just in the same way that I wouldn't spend £60 on Smash Brothers Ultimate.
No, that's, you said it's a half-baked analogy. That is a perfect analogy because I think that was entirely their business plan. And also, we said before recording, I think the timing of this is because Smash Brothers DLC, Ultimate's DLC, finally came to an end. They stopped their rollout of characters. Smash Brothers isn't in the conversation as much. There's the biggest window there will be before the next Smash Brothers. And Masahiro Sakurai has said he's not doing that many anyway. So it feels like this might be the last one. So it feels like now is the time you should do it. Free to play is the obvious thing. Like, get people in. Like the by virtue of you giving this a chance or giving it a shot, downloading it, that already speaks volumes. And I've seen the player numbers be sky high. Apparently, I saw Maximilian Dude talking about it's had the most concurrent players of any fighting game ever.
Right.
And it's just like the most people playing at once kind of thing, which no other franchise has ever managed to get. So I do think a lot of people are just giving it a shot. And I think those core mechanics are great. I think they could do with giving you a little bit more in terms of the free-to-play side of it. Like, when you boot it up, you only have Superman. I think Steven Universe is free. And I think there's one other character that's free.
Wonder Woman.
Yes, you get Wonder Woman from the tutorial, if you beat the tutorial missions or whatever. And then everyone else, you're either being incentivized to buy Gleamium, which is their premium currency. Every single chance it gets, it's like, do you want to buy some Gleamium? Like, yeah, you know, do you want a Wonga? And there's like a lot of that. Or you can go do missions and get coins and buy them that way. And thankfully, the coin amounts are pretty solid. Like I managed to afford Taz. He was 1,500 coins after just five fights, which is really cool. They're like only a few minutes long as well. But some of that does hinge on the early game missions they're giving you, which is just do a fight, do a special, do a whatever. And so, yeah, I think the Fortnite comparison is very, very interesting. And a lot of people have latched onto this. And I do think the core mechanics are fine. It's just, like, for me, it's too close to Smash. I don't think they differentiate it enough. And the core, like, the literal feel of Melee, I think is way better in Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
So I guess that's my
I totally get that. You know, if you have both, you know, you're going to go with the one that you think is, you know, better. And if Multiverses reminds you of Smash, of course you're going to want to play Smash. The same way, you know, if I play PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and it reminds me of Call of Duty Warzone, and I just want to play Call of Duty Warzone, I'll go play Call of Duty Warzone.
Very true. The thing is, though, in the Fortnite comparison, I got into Fortnite because it was free to play, so it was a barrier of entry, like, removed. It was Fortnite 2017. Good lord. Yep. That was my year of Fortnite. That was when that first launched, and I played it a lot. I also played PUBG, and I didn't click with it. And I've since played more PUBG, and it didn't work for me. Out of the two, I will take Fortnite.
Yeah.
I know that's blasphemous for some people, but I feel like Fortnite had a feel to it that just felt better to play than PUBG did, especially on consoles back then. It was like on fire on Xbox. But I think that's what it's going to come down to is feel of gameplay, or that's counterbalanced with the fact that you don't have to pay much money to have a very similar Smash-adjacent experience and just get it on your console. Because, I guess what have you thought about the meat and potatoes of the actual like feel of it?
Yes, I think it feels good, but again, I don't have that comparison point or the immediate comparison point of this might feel a little bit off compared to Smash Brothers. This super move might not be as satisfying compared to Smash Brothers. To me, like the sheer act of playing it, like I said, was way more satisfying than I expected. You know, I kept playing matches when I only had a limited amount of time to do so, and I had to leave the house because I wanted to, you know, trounce more people as Superman, because some of those super moves that you get, especially one of Superman's moves where you kind of like fly into someone, grab them by the scuff of the neck, and then just uppercut them into oblivion, feels good to pull off. You know, some things don't feel as satisfying, like Shaggy's move where he grabs a sandwich and he kind of tosses it across the arena doesn't feel as satisfying as it maybe should have or should do, but there's enough to the bones of it where it works on a kind of core lizard brain level. I just sort of need to look into the monetization aspect of it more because, like I said, I've only played an hour, you know.
The other stuff as well that they've done as a differentiator is status effects. So, like, every person's move, like Taz, he can inflict tasty on people, which is, he gets that from doing, he has a move where he just covers people in salt and pepper, or you can, like, hold triangle or Y and just eat them and chew them for a bit, and that inflicts tasty.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's a whole wing of the tutorial about elemental effects. Like, Superman can do a frost breath thing. There's like different fire attacks and everything depending on the character, and that side of it, I guess we'll see how that stuff gets balanced, because that's the whole side of it where it's like, and make sure you equip your perks and you can buy more and make sure you do all this stuff, like the random loot side of it, which is the free to play side of it. And that's like, there's a whole side of this game that I think it's not ugly, but like the UI is pretty awful. It's really unwieldy, and like it's weird because there's a giant play button in the middle, but like for a second your eyes go everywhere other than there for a bit, and it's like, how can I just play this game? Like, I've just fought your account thing off. I just want to dive in here and play a couple of matches. I don't want to fight the UI. I don't want you having pop-ups about what premium stuff you've got going on, or asking me to pay £40 to buy whatever. I just want to have a couple of games. And I think that it kind of gets in its own way with a lot of the elemental attack stuff, the percentage damage stuff, the perk stuff, and the way the UI works, where they redeem this and go over here and make sure you've connected your account to this. And I wonder how much that stuff will get in the way overall.
Well, this is the thing. I have two thoughts on this. First, I'm approaching this game from like a shockingly casual perspective. Like, you couldn't get more laid back and casual than I am approaching this game. So I've not even necessarily thought about the perks or the elemental damage to that level at the moment.
I do like that you don't need to.
Yeah,
for
that
now,
is
that's
true.
The thing. Yeah.
Yeah, for now, unless you want to properly get into it. Mm-hmm. I am treating this game in a way that I couldn't treat Smash Brothers, because I was playing Multiverses, and I thought this would be so easy to get all my friends who don't even necessarily play games to jump on, and we can have like a Friday night, get some bevs online, and we can just like, you know, play as these daft characters and have these 2v2 matches, because it's free to play. you know, my friends have PlayStations, they can get it. There would be no way in hell I could ever convince any of those friends that I play games with to get a Switch and also get Smash Bros. for 10 minutes on a Friday night. However, yeah. I like that this caters to that kind of casual audience where you could, you know, get a group online, get it downloaded. Yeah, you've only got three characters at the moment, but, you know, if you enjoy it enough, maybe you want to buy into it a little bit more. It has that ease of use. It has that accessibility to make for that kind of party-based fun in a way that I just could never justify with Super Smash Brothers because the point of entry, for me, was just way too high
for someone
who didn't have friends who already owned it. Like, I could have got Smash Brothers as a Christmas present, for instance, but I never did because I knew the window for playing that game would have been so small that it almost wasn't worth the money. Like, unless I brought it in and we were playing in the office, it wouldn't have got used. It might have got used once a year for 10 minutes at best, whereas hopefully Multiverses, even if it only gets used once a year, twice a year, I haven't paid anything for it.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's another thing is like, do you like see yourself spending money on it? Because they have, like we said at the very beginning or the beginning of this segment, they have three premium versions that they keep throwing in people's faces, just saying like, this is the default one, download this. And it's like, you have to go on it and be like, select version, give me the free one. I don't want your $34.99 one. Which in itself only comes with a handful of hero tokens. Some of them come, I think it's the deluxe one, comes with an amount of hero tokens that are more than the characters that are in the game.
Right.
So it's like, they're kind of overselling you because you can't even redeem that many. I guess you're just, well, I might as well spend this much money because then I know that whatever they put out in the future, I can just buy. Stuff like that is a bit Warner Brothers. It's a bit like, we'll just over monetize everything. I don't see myself putting any money into it. I think it's very interesting talking about the upfront premium price of Smash Brothers because they then did charge you for the DLC afterwards for the set of characters they did. But that like that entrance fee was so sky high. Like it's right now, it's Nintendo pricing. It's still £60 or whatever.
Yeah.
On the eShop. And so do you ever see yourself putting money into this? I wonder what the legs are on it because it's sky high player number wise, and I wonder whether it lasts.
Yeah. I just want to kind of clarify something about Smash Brothers. By the way, I'm only talking about its lack of value for me personally. Like amount of content in Smash Brothers Ultimate, especially for that £60, you know, is worth it if you're playing that game all the time. It's only not worth it to me because I wouldn't be playing that game all the time. When it comes to Multiverses and whether or not I'll buy in, it kind of depends on the legs of it. Like, is it going to be something that I just jump into now and again? If so, I probably won't buy into it. However, if I find myself really engrossed in the kind of battle pass system or just playing games, I want those characters and I will happily pay, you know, £35 or whatever it is to unlock, you know, most of that roster, hopefully all of that roster. I haven't actually checked what you get in that £35 version of it, but I want those characters. I want to be able to play as Shaggy. I want to be able to play as Tom and Jerry, you know, because I love the animations and I love what I see as their kind of like unique play styles. And yeah, it would be something I want to buy into in that regard. Like, I like just having everything available.
Yeah, they do have an advertisement on the top, right? There's a rotating thing in the UI as well, telling you what offers are on or whatever. And one of them is that they do have a selection of characters for free every few weeks. And so like right now it's Superman and Steven Universe and whatever, but it incentivizes you to check back in. Maybe the character you want, maybe if you can't afford them yet, they might become free anyway. But yeah, it's in an interesting spot, I think. Yes.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I have one question before we wrap up the Multiverses selection. And someone might have asked this on the internet already. Like, it seems like a basic take, but why are Tom and Jerry working together? They don't like each other, man.
But even their standing waiting for the match animation is them attempting to shake hands, and like they've both got weapons behind their backs.
Yes,
like I mean that's always the thing, though. If you you watch a lot of Tom and Jerry,
yeah.
They do care about each other.
They
like,
do.
They like if Tom was in peril, Jerry, he wants him to be there.
It's true, but at the same time, I do want a 1v1 Tom versus Jerry. I just feel like that's a missed opportunity because you could have him chasing around the map.
It's true.
A big mallet.
I love the way they've done their animations where all of them they're fighting each other all the time, but you just happen to be around them. Like, there's a whole thing where it's one of their ranged attacks where Tom throws Jerry, and then and wherever he lands, there's something where they bat a ball between the two of them, but it's just hitting both of them. But obviously, if you're in between that, you're getting hit as well. And I think that stuff like that, that's that Looney Tunes energy, which really, really, really works.
Yeah.
That's what you could have absolutely done, a Looney Tunes Smash Brothers game. I mean, Looney Brothers, call it whatever you want. Like, they could have easily done that. I think that there is a version of this where if you just play as Bugs and Taz, I'm saying Looney Tunes. Tom and Jerry aren't even Looney Tunes. They're Hanna-Barbera.
I think it still works.
Yes, a cartoon Smash Brothers, Cartoon Network style game. I'm saying this. I think that exists as I throw my arms out to the side.
Is that true?
I think it exists. There's a Cartoon Network kart racer thing. I'm doing weird stuff with my arms now, but that's to help me think. I wonder if that idea was always floated and it was never done with this much money before, and then this is the nearest thing we've got to it. And obviously, you throw in Steven Universe and Adventure Time as well. But yes, I think that it's in a very interesting place, and looking at the player numbers, so many people are checking this out. But not that many people on my respective social feeds. I've not seen an overwhelming amount of people checking it out, but if you look at the raw data, they are. So I'm curious. Like, let us know. Come find us on Twitter. Let us know what you think of Multiverses if you've been playing it, and if you're a Smash fan, how it compares to that as well. For now, this has been the wind-up, where we just... It feels like years ago since we talked about Ori, but I'm just the happiest man. It's a lovely time. But I've been Scott Tilford. You've been Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next week.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered